Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Mattis. Adam, the NBA draft happened yesterday. Free agency is about to start right now. You have a bunch of white hair on the top of your head. I feel ancient. Kenyon Martin Jr. got drafted.
Cole Anthony, right? Greg Anthony.
Yeah, there's
the juniors are always funny, man. You know, in a couple of years, DeJuan Wagner's son is coming in. That one's going to be the weirdest way. He's like a top pick or a top prospect right now. That one's going to be really, really weird.
I was going to make a dad joke, but it's just like literally us being old dads.
Yeah,
like
that's
basically where we're at right now. Yeah. We have a fun show. So obviously, like I said, we had the draft yesterday, 2 days ago, by the time you guys are listening to this, that we are going to recap in our own way. We are going to look ahead to the free agency period that is going to kick off tomorrow or today by the time you guys are listening to this. And then this power rankings that we have set up
good
for
one.
You guys is going to be especially fun, where we talk about our top five NBA draft spin moves, where they say something without necessarily saying something. You'll understand when we get closer to it. But let's start though with that draft. What we're going to do, we each pick three draft picks that caught our eye as interesting. And Adam, I'm going to let you start on this one. What was the number one draft pick that, you know, you kind of, when it came down, you said, oh, that's an interesting one.
Well, I guess I can put these in order. I just had them kind of randomly, but the number one pick that sort of made me go like, wow, that's a great value get, goes to the Sacramento Kings and Tyrese Haliburton sliding all the way to the 12th pick. This guy was a guy that in almost every single mock was, you know, really high up there, just like a super solid guy. You get Monty McNair in his first ever draft there, and he ends up, you know, it's funny. There's certain teams that it just feels like never breaks their way, you know, and this was one where Sacramento, there they are, and a player falls to them that I think is both a good, very good fit for them, and also just everybody had him going higher. I love his game. I even more love his draft night suit. I thought it was phenomenal. Absolutely brilliant. Just loved it.
I went out and bought one of those.
Did you? Yeah. I need to get size for mine as well. But he's super smart. And I think he fits with, number one, I think he fits with De'Aaron Fox, which is what you need. I love that backcourt now going forward between those two. You've got the speed, the athleticism, the burst, the like superstar guy in De'Aaron Fox. But I think that Haliburton could be a guy that's like your steady. Sometimes you need the like steady one and the wild one. And I think that's what you get between these two guys. Great length, you know, or you know, I think this is going to be a really, really good backcourt. So I love the pick.
There was a report that I believe it's actually a report now. There was like a Reddit kind of theory floating around, but which I believe has kind of turned in closer to a report that he actually really wanted to go to Sacramento.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is fascinating.
I love it, though. You know what? I mean,
it's great. Well, I think it's fantastic. I think it's really, really cool. I think it's an awesome, like, I want more guys to, like, pick out small markets and say, no, I want to be there.
What was the reason? Do you know? What was the idea behind him? Yeah, I mean, either.
I don't know. Big cow guy.
Yeah. All right, what do you got? Who's the first one on your list?
Well, all right, so in typical fashion, actually, you know what? I'm going to sound smart with the one that I'm going to start here.
I highly doubt that.
I really liked Josh Green going to Dallas.
Okay, to Dallas. All right.
Yeah, I really enjoy the pick. So last year, Dallas was, I believe, still the best offense that we've ever seen.
Right, yeah. Yeah, incredible
and,
offense. Efficiency, I mean.
Yeah, right. But still, like,
some people maybe listening to this, they're like, I don't know, but.
Right.
But they were. They were.
Like, Warriors fans are like, what the
Yeah, I know, for real, exactly.
But I think that Dallas's identity last year was that we're just going to try to outscore you and do whatever we can because that's what the roster was designed to do. But I like what they've done. They've basically kind of taken a bit of a step back in that regard and really, really focused on physicality because, you know, and I'm biased because obviously I cover the Lakers and I saw the Lakers have success being really physical. But Green is like this, he's built like a freaking,
yeah,
I don't know, like a fire hydrant, basically. He's built
maybe like a tight end or something. Yeah,
he's a really thick, physical guy. He can shoot, is still also vertically athletic, which I think is also which makes him even more interesting. And you know, if he can knock down a three pointer and also defend, he's one of those rare draft picks that I feel like can actually improve that team this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. He's an interesting pick there. I mean, it's not as much of a shock because he was sort of mocked in that same range, but I do like it for them. I've also heard, you know, all these prospects, because of COVID, because of how just tough this year has been to really put in the same type of work, and, you know, a lot of these draft prospects from the time college is over to before they're doing interviews, they're traveling, they're doing this. A lot of these guys have been working out in draft pods around the country, different groups, you know, have kind of been working out together. His name is the number one name I heard about the improvement he had made between the end of, you know, the beginning of quarantine and now. So I'm intrigued by him as well. The next guy on my list was for Miami, Precious Achiuwa. They kind of, similar to Sacramento, Precious had been mocked a little bit higher than that. I don't think it's as shocking that he fell where he did, but man, every year we have one of those teams where, or one of those picks where it feels like a player lands in a spot that perfect, where the culture and identity of the team perfectly fits the player. And to me, that was Precious. Incredibly aggressive, incredibly confident, super athletic. I think he's going to go to Miami to get even more shredded, which is crazy because he's already one of the more shredded players in this draft.
He makes me feel less as a man.
Yeah. And so now
I'm like, good Lord.
And the thing about him that made him such an interesting prospect for people. I mean, one, Memphis, you know, had a top five defense, I believe, in NCAA. And they didn't have Wiseman for most of that. Precious Achiuwa, you know, I think gets a lot of credit for that. Now you pair him with Bam Adebayo, and now you got two guys that, in theory, their ceilings could guard 1 through 5. That's two Terminators in your front court, man. Like, it wasn't necessarily a need, I think, that Miami had, but when a perfect guy falls into your lap, you adjust your plans.
I'm not sure they'll ever play side, maybe not like early on, especially. Right, I don't think they'll really play side by side, but it's great that, like, he now, you mentioned the two Terminator thing. Like, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger teaching, like, the next Arnie, right? Like, he just, it's really cool. It's going to be really fun to watch Precious kind of grow in that role and stuff. And I believe it might have even been, no, I think it was somebody from Heat Twitter who was basically saying there was, like, a picture of him doing a curl, which, like, he might have been curling a car. And you know, he was like, if anybody fits into Heat culture, it's this guy. And he's sitting there like lifting a baby elephant. It was crazy. I'm going to go again. So my picks, all first rounders and stuff and relatively high.
Mine as well. Yeah. I'm focused on the first round,
but Obi Toppin going to New York.
Mm.
I like the pick. I think we sometimes get too focused on, you know, a player's age as they're coming into the draft. And, you know, there was all the tweets about, like, Obi Toppin is like 1 month older than so-and-so player and all of those things, but he is still the college player of the year. He still had incredible production at a school where, like, every single team that they played against, they knew what they had to do to try to beat Dayton. And also, like, I enjoy just going with the smart pick. Yeah. We don't get to say this about New York very often. I just think
here's the thing about that
he pick. Fell to them. And they didn't overthink it.
Here's the thing about that pick. He might end up looking like not the smart pick. I mean, his defense is a giant question.
Yeah,
defend the NBA. So we see this sometimes where a player goes in who's very exciting and dynamic offensively as he is and as showman and all that stuff, but it doesn't pan out and he's just getting murdered out there, then we're going to look at it and say, oh man, a classic Knicks move. And that's what I worry. Like, if, you know, if Obi Toppin went to, again, Miami or, you know, San Antonio, or I don't know, one of these pipelines, Toronto, one of these pipelines, I'd be like, oh man, this guy's going to pan out because he's got the offensive flair and they're going to instill these other things.
Yeah.
You go to the Knicks and I'm like, well, Kevin Knox was exciting at one point. I remember people being very excited. Obi Toppin, I think, more excited than Kevin Knox, but still the point stands. So I worry about, that's one where I worry that the fit, I look at Obi Toppin and I go, oh, I was a fan. I'm not as optimistic anymore.
I think the hope there, if you're a Knicks fan, is that it's a different Knicks organization, right? You have Leon Rose now and
like they've, okay.
Well, no, that's the hope. I'm not,
okay. Yeah.
To quote Ted Lasso, it's the hope that kills you.
That is a hope that I think will kill you. But I don't want to be too hot takey here. I mean, Obi Toppin is an interesting one. And again, there was a lot of players in this draft that I thought landed in places where I'm like, oh, okay, that'll be intriguing. That was one where I'm like, oh, God, I hope it works out for him. Uh-huh. The next one on my list here, not necessarily a – I don't know if it's a good pick or not bad pick, to be honest with you. But it was the single most shocking pick that happened, and that was Patrick Williams going all the way up at number four for Chicago. Yeah. This is Arturis Karnisovas' first draft. He just arrives. He gets his first draft. And I love that in his first draft, he's, first of all, nothing leaked out of Chicago. Nobody saw that pick coming. It was very much a surprise one. And that was the MO in Denver. People didn't never know what Denver was doing, in part because they had a small group and they were, mafia level silent. Same thing happens with the Chicago Bulls. All of a sudden, Patrick Williams, his name first popped up that I saw connected to Chicago on draft night, meaning they really did a good job of protecting that. And when he went at number four, I thought, oh, my gosh, the whole board is now off. That was like the ripple effect that created the fun night, in my opinion, was that mm-hmm. domino fell and it changed everything behind it in really interesting ways. And, again, I don't know if that's a good thing. I just like that usually when you get a new GM, the first pick is always a safe one, you know? It's always the, okay, this is the consensus top guy.
It's so funny, you and I went in complete different directions.
Okay.
Because I was like, I like the fact that New York went with the safe pick. And you're like, no, swing for the fences, buddy. Let her rip.
Well, let me say it. I'm not saying, I like it for entertainment value. I'm not putting myself in the shoes of a Chicago Bulls fan. And again, Patrick Williams is one of those guys that like really rose up. So maybe, maybe there's something there. It should also be mentioned that Arturis Karnisovas was a part of a front office in Denver that just nailed the draft time and time again. I mean, they probably mm-hmm. have the best – the Denver Nuggets probably have the best 6 or 7 year run of drafts of anybody in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see, was Arturis the main point of this? You know, he comes from Europe, and Denver, a lot of those picks were European players. And speaking of which, in this draft, he did draft – tell me if you've heard this one before – a second rounder, 44th pick, very hyper-skilled but relatively unknown – Serbian center. Arturis was the guy that brought Nikola Jokic over 7 years ago, actually. And here he is in his first draft with the Bulls, and he picks some guy out of Serbia in the second round. So who knows? Maybe lightning strikes twice.
Have you bought that guy's jersey yet?
I have not. It should be noted, though, that the largest population of Serbians outside of Belgrade, I know this because I'm in Denver, the largest concentration of Serbians outside of Belgrade is Chicago. So there you go. It's a I'm sure the city of Chicago will be very happy about that pick.
My last one, I went with Jonathan Wiseman of Golden State. I like drafting a big in the same division that the Lakers are. Is it James?
Are you talking about the number two pick?
Yeah,
James Wiseman.
Like, why did I say Jonathan?
Is there another Wiseman? I'm sitting out here and I'm like, oh my God, did I somehow miss a second?
In 2020, there aren't very many Wisemen, so like I'm glad you questioned that one.
So funny.
But James Wiseman of Golden State, I like the pick. I like the big who like it's crazy that he played like a handful of games. He played like 4 games for Memphis and still wound up being the second pick overall. I like the idea of in this division now, and this was one of the things that Givney actually talked about after the draft, was how many, you know, kind of more traditional centers were drafted earlier than he expected. And I kind of wonder if that was a response to the Lakers having success going as big as they did last year. And if you're just trying to match up with the team, yeah. I think it's an interesting move. I like the pick. I think he's in the perfect spot. It really, really sucks that Klay got hurt, which isn't going to provide him the same kind of spacing he would normally have in that organization. But I enjoy a big going that high when we think of bigs as like the NBA's running backs.
This is the death of small ball. I don't think it is. But the Lakers really have shifted, and also just the league has shifted. More of these guys that are 6'9", 6'10", are now more skilled. So the idea of sticking a guy who can shoot at power forward position to stretch the core, well, now you have a lot more players that I think are versatile enough to exploit the weaknesses in that. I don't know. I mean, Chandler Parsons, for example, was the guy that was like, oh, he's a strength. He's a power forward. Look at this. And it's like, okay, yeah. Well, now we have a lot of guys that can take advantage of Chandler Parsons at the four. So mm-hmm. I wonder if that is a response to the Lakers. I wondered that about Denver last night when they took a big and Zeke Nnaji at 22. I wondered if they thought, a second big going there. I wonder if they feel like they need bodies to battle Anthony Davis for years to come.
Yeah. It was a fun draft. I think it's the kind of draft that we're going to need a few years to figure out how good it was or how bad it was or whatever. Just based on stuff that I read heading into it, I wasn't all that thrilled. So it didn't necessarily piss me off that the Lakers didn't take a single player in it. So that's where we have
the draft is for teams that have to earn it, Anthony. That's the difference.
I'm just going to let that carry us off in a break. Ironically, I would make a tampering joke, but it might actually be about Milwaukee right now, right?
And this is such shit. I don't even want to talk about it. This is so dumb. But yeah, this happened a few times now, right? It's always how this works.
The last time I can remember, it was the Clippers who leaked their deal too early for whom. Right. And they leaked it too early and the NBA didn't let it go through. I kind of wonder if that's where we find ourselves now.
Well, this one is a little bit of a, like, they leaked it to Woj and then Woj phrased it wrong. That's the interesting thing about this is they didn't announce anything. Woj did.
I wonder how Woj feels about that. Like it doesn't matter. He might be the central figure in a potentially, by the way, league altering deal. Cause I think you and I are both big Bogey fans. And
I mean, yeah, he's the type of player that if added to a team like Milwaukee makes them meaningfully better. He's not the type of guy. I mean, a lot of people listening to this might say Bogdanovich is going to swing. Cause at a certain point you get a good enough team. We're talking about the margins.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I wonder how Woj feels like just sitting back there and like, I might have just reconfigured the face of the league and the way that the league might go. It's wild. It's insane.
It is wild.
My favorite theory is that Pat Riley leaked it.
That'd be a good one. That'd be a good one. Yeah, we'll look into it and we'll find out. And, you know, if it hurts Milwaukee, I'm sure the league will come down hard. If they find out that, you know, Pelinka linked it, then I'm sure there will be a it was a misunderstanding. It was a mistweet.
He's not Pelinka. It's Pelinka.
It's Pelinka. He's leaking it. All right. Free agency, though.
Free agency. Well, along those same lines that we just talked about with Bogdanovich, we're going to look at players who could potentially join teams. And by themselves, are they franchise reconfiguring type players? No, obviously not. I don't think there's anybody on the market like that who is attainable right now, realistically attainable. But are there players that you look back on and you say, man, that might have been the pickup that swung this thing? It might have been the departure that swung this thing. So I'm interested, Adam, is there anybody on the market that you're looking at and you're saying, is there anybody above anybody else that you're looking at is like, that's one to keep an eye on?
Well, I think the first thing that's interesting to me is Giannis's extension, which I think we all fully expect him now to sign with the way that Milwaukee has sort of gone all in. But I mean, if you're Milwaukee, and by the way, every report is that the Bucks feel 100% confident and this was a thing that's already been agreed to.
They always do, though.
I know everybody always does that, but until he signs the extension, I think that's always going to be a story. And if he does, it's an important story. Signing a supermax, anytime a player signs for $250 million, it's a story. So that's the first thing. But then when you talk about players that can affect a championship title, and these are, by the way, people are going to be listening to this saying he's not leaving or this. I know what I'm saying is these are the players that could, you know, Davis Bertans at the top of the list there. You got Danilo Gallinari, you got Joe Harris, Montrezl Harrell, of course, is another player that I end up leaving. What's that?
Harrell seems to be leaving.
Right. And I think he'll probably end up going to a team where it doesn't affect the title window, but there's always a chance that, I mean, he's a good enough player. Christian Wood's an interesting one. I think he'll probably be retained there in Detroit, but he's a guy that if somehow he does make it to somewhere else, I could see him having a massive glow up. And then you go to the other market here that I'm looking at that's interesting, and maybe you have some insight on this one, but the market for bigs, I mentioned, there was Ibaka, but there's also DeMarcus Cousins, Dwight Howard, and Marc Gasol, even Mason Plumlee, that I look at and I go, okay, none of those guys, Marc Gasol's old. Mason Plumlee's limited but very talented. Dwight Howard, a little old, but we saw what he did. And then DeMarcus Cousins, obviously, with the injury history. But you look at all those guys and say, could they swing an NBA championship title if they were the backup center for a meaningful team? I mean, last year the Clippers were very small. You know, maybe that ended up killing it. If they have Mason Plumlee on their team, does it make – I mean, Nikola Jokic absolutely murdered Montrezl Harrell in the playoffs, and that was a big reason why Denver was able to come back. If they have just any center that can battle them, does that make things different? And all those guys I just mentioned, Cousins, Dwight, Plumlee, maybe even Marc Gasol, I don't think they're getting very much money. So those guys are all going to end up going for very cheap, and they could end up being a guy that has a 10-minute-per-game role that swings things for a contender.
Well, that's actually, you know, talking about the cheap guys is actually where I was going to start. The reason Dwight Howard was so valuable last year was because he was on, like, somehow he called it playing for free right. when he was asked about it just recently. And, you know, that's kind of where we thought we were going with the Wiseman pick, and in that, like, you know, maybe that high of draft capital isn't used on a player with his skill set. You know, do you continue to overpay the Rudy Goberts? We just saw Al Horford. It took a pick to move him off to OKC, right? And you know, when you're looking at all of these bigs, it's how close to just net positive value financially can you get? And I think what you kind of have to look for, you have to take a chance on a guy. And if that chance works out, that's the player who winds up flipping this thing. I'm really curious about, like, where Dwight Howard winds up, because I don't think he's going to be a Laker. It doesn't sound like he, you know, he did the whole, like, you know, I would love to return, but everything before the but doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, yeah, so like I think it's going to be the team that takes a chance on a vet minimum big to play backup. And if that vet minimum big can step in there and play meaningful minutes against the Anthony Davises, against the Nikola Jokic's, if they can do things that, like, Rudy Gobert does, but to a 75%
no chance, but
percentile or we'll whatever, see.
Yeah,
just in the minutes that they're out there, like that's all. I think he's the minute fillers. That's exactly what Dwight Howard was, and the Lakers had huge success with it.
I just think that he's more. Almost at the stage of his career, I would trust him, especially with this crazy season and no offseason basically for him. I think he's more of the Andre Iguodala path, where if somehow he took off the first 60 games of the season and joined a team at the end in a very minor role, I think that would work. If you need him to be that guy for most of the night, I don't think so. Whereas I do think a Marc Gasol, for example, can be that guy, or an Ibaka that we talked about. So that'll be interesting to see. The other players on here, this is kind of funny. You know, the Portland Trailblazers just picked up Covington, and I thought that was a good pick. It cost them a good move. It cost them two draft picks, but does Carmelo's role change at all? I think we all assumed he was going back to Portland. Does that change? Does any other team take a stab at a Carmelo? And if so, is that a positive or a negative move? I think a lot of people, myself included, were surprised at the impact that Carmelo had in Portland, which I think was, you know, mostly a positive one. Can he have a similar role now on another team? I'm skeptical, but I'm curious to see if somebody tries.
It just dawned on me that Carmelo is going to be a Laker. So that's fun. That's great. Looking forward to that.
It will be fun, though. Again, like, he said the same thing, I'm sure, about Dwight Howard and Rajon Rondo. And, you know, it looks, when you're playing with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you don't have to be that good. You have to be really good at something. And he is.
Well, a different version of this point, though, is that with these veterans, like, can a veteran be awful during the regular season just to completely save themselves for the playoffs and then be you know, not awful? Yeah. Or in Rondo's case, actually good.
I'd be nervous about Melo, man. Yeah,
Rondo, I'm not saying that, like, this is something I would wager on.
Rondo turning into prime JJ Redick in the playoffs really helped from behind the 3-point line. That was,
well, it helped that, like, he was never guarded like JJ Redick.
Yeah, that's true. You do, the NBA players, turns out they make them when they're wide open.
So, like, I don't know. Like, I kind of wonder, but this kind of gets back to the point that we were making about bigs. I wonder if it can actually be extended across the entire league, right? Where some of these veterans that we thought were on their way out, can you pick them up at a veteran minimum kind of contract and tell them, hey, just, you know, kind of tread water throughout the season and then just, you know, all of your energy, use it all in the postseason and see what kind of player you can be then. I'm kind of interested if that becomes a trend, because Rondo was laughably productive to the point where I was literally laughing at the stuff he was doing on the court in the postseason. And maybe he's just like that kind of smart where he can turn that switch on up and on,
I think he is. I mean, let's be honest. I think he is.
Maybe he is. But I wonder if there are more vets who are capable of doing that kind of thing.
Andre Iguodala taught a lot of these guys a lot of important lessons, man. I mean, he's extended his career like 6 years just by doing that exact thing.
You're absolutely right.
Kyle Korver, by the way, another one of those names that, like, I mean, he's 39 years old. He's up there. But God, at the same time, if you had Kyle Korver on your team, especially a Lakers team, for example, where so little is going to be asked of the role play. Exactly. And knock down shots, which he's like, yeah, I'll do that. Run around some screens, I can do that. Mm-hmm. So there are some players like that I do think could make an impact in free agency. Curious to see how that goes. Oh, and then lastly, I did want to mention the teams that I kind of have my eyes on.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The Knicks, of course, because they have a bunch of that space, and the Knicks are always just, you know, in the belief that they can acquire a James Harden, or, you know, that they can do something. So we'll see what happens. Russell Westbrook or something. The Atlanta Hawks in a similar boat. They could throw a wrench in all of a bunch of people's plans, whether it's a big move or whether it's a small move, and they take one of these guys, a Joe Harris or something, off the market, and you think, okay, well, that guy could have won a championship. Now he's with the Hawks. The Pelicans are interesting to me. If you look at the Pelicans depth chart right now, they've got a lot of guys. So they just pick up Bledsoe and Hill. You've got Lonzo Ball there. I kind of feel like
they have a decision to make on Ingram.
I think they are in a position right now where they need to make a move, and I wouldn't be surprised if Lonzo was a guy that they end up moving, and that would be kind of an interesting big story. I don't know how many teams want him, especially if you're talking about having to. I was thinking about this earlier, Anthony. If you get a 22 through 23-year-old player, he has 2 years left on his deal, but you don't want to re-sign him. Like, you know, you are inclined to, like, not take that player on or take him for a year and then move him, because you don't want to lose a player for nothing. But if you got a veteran player and they had 2 years left, they're 36-year-old, and you have 36, 37, 37, you're like, yeah, I'll just do that, and then they're gone and they're done. It's kind of funny the psychology that goes into this, because to me, Lonzo would help a lot of teams that have no interest in re-signing him after that.
And I'm looking at your team.
I mean, I would love – I mean, I've been banging this drum for years. I would love to see him in Denver. I don't know if it's in the cards, in part because I don't – what does New Orleans want that Denver has? I don't think Lonzo raises – I mean, he's not a good enough player that you're like, we want to mortgage the future. It's more about would you move – you know, move some pieces around. I think Lonzo is more of a deal of a like, hey, we have too many guards in New Orleans, which is true, but we need a big or a wing who has a wing or big that we could use. So that's why I don't see it with Denver.
Yeah, I would love to see. I think the Lonzo going to Denver is one of my favorite scenarios, quite frankly. I think you allow Jamal Murray to have the ball in his hands as often as possible. You just ask Lonzo, hey, go out there and defend. And then also you have the best passing big that the league has who can fill in the gaps and optimize. Because if there's anybody who can optimize Lonzo, it would be probably Jokic. It'd be fun. I'm all in on this concept.
Denver's
I'm going to keep bugging you about it. Like I keep.
Hey, I'm for this. Like this is a move I would take. I would happily move on from. The only thing is the salaries that match Lonzo are Will Barton and Gary Harris. They're also guards, so I don't. I mean, there's no other roster. There's no other contracts on Denver's roster that match that. So you would end up having to add pieces, and like I don't think Denver needs to give away a future asset or something. Like, I don't think Lonzo's worth a draft pick or something like that. He might make you better, but he might not. Let's be honest. He's a little bit of a two-faced player throughout his career, and Denver doesn't need a two-faced player. They need guys that they know can impact them.
Are you better with Lonzo on your roster next year or Will Barton on your roster next year?
I think Will Barton. They're actually pretty similar. They're similar body types. Will Barton is significantly better three-point shooter, and Will Barton is like in his prime kind of guy, no weaknesses. You know, him and – people don't realize this. Him and Jokic, just a couple years back, were the number one pick-and-roll duo in the NBA. Not Jamal Murray and Jokic, Will Barton and Jokic. So Will Barton, sadly – I think Will Barton would be a much more popular name if he didn't get hurt 2 years in a row going into the playoffs, which is just – bad timing. He had never been hurt in his career. He wasn't hurt during this regular season. He was fantastic. He actually had his best regular season this year and then got hurt at the worst moment. Denver, by the way, I don't think they're going to go for Lonzo because they picked up Campazzo Do you know this guy?
Campazzo.
Campazzo, yeah, from Argentina, man. So yeah. He's rumored. Mark Stein today mentioned one of the most fun players not in the NBA. I think he's a 5'11 Steve Nash. That's sort of how you describe him. He's compacto. Yeah, exactly. He's Steve Nash. If Steve Nash was only 5'11. So there is one glaring weakness to his game, but we'll see.
Oh man, free agency is going to be a blast. I have a really good feeling going into this. Let's take a quick second though, because when we come back, I really can't wait to get into this game. This is one of the power rankings that I've most looked forward to, in a little while, and it might have something to do with it being my idea. So let's come back and talk about that. All right, so I'm going to let you explain what you want to call these power rankings.
No, basically, you call them spin moves.
Well, I call them spin moves. Before we started recording, I said, hey, let's go over our top however many draft day cliches, and you thought of a different approach to it.
Well, so what I love about the draft is if you actually listen closely, every player is analyzed the exact same way. You just either phrase it positively or negatively.
Yeah.
And it just depends on what it is. So that's what I wanted to do, is these things that are like, okay, you could tell there's a spin on it, but then we're going to give you the negative spin of that exact same analysis. And that's what I like about it.
All right. So I'm going to let you start. Did you have five of these?
I've got five.
So you have five of them, and I'm supposed to guess the negative.
Sure, you can guess the negative one. I'll tell you afterwards if you don't get it. But right. Yeah, you can guess it. Right. Tell me if you've heard this one. Really like this guy. He's got positional versatility. You know, he can be a three. He can be a four. You know, some lineups, he could be a five. He's very positionally fluid. You know, he's very positionally, he's versatile. What do you think the inverse of this is?
We have no effing clue where this guy plays.
Exactly. We don't know if he's a point guard or a shooting guard. We don't know if he's a shooting guard or small forward. We can't tell.
The old Sun Yue.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with him is I'm not sure what position he is. That's the flip
right.
side of it.
Right. 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 So like if they aren't as high on the player, right.
Right.
You're like, oh, he might be this draft's Draymond Green, where he could defend multiple positions.
Oh, Draymond Green didn't have a position. That was the knock on him.
Right, right.
He's a little small to be a
right. But if you aren't high on the pick, you're like, oh, I just don't know where they're gonna put him. Yeah. I'm just not sure.
You heard that one? I'm telling you, if you just listen to the draft, it's like every pick, the analyst goes, "Ooh, I don't know. Doesn't have a position." Next one, positionally fluid. It's great, fantastic. Really, and you're like, wow. It's every single time, every single one.
Yeah.
My next one. This one's easy to spot. You don't have to think too hard.
Good.
He's got a lot of potential to become a good shooter. Anthony, the thing I like about this guy is he's got potential to become a good shooter.
I don't even know what that looks like.
That's the thing. It's like, it depends. What are we? So he's not
a good shooter. You either make the shot or you don't.
Yeah. So he's not a good shooter, but you know what he has is great shooting potential. He theoretically could add shooting to his game.
And is it honestly, like a long pointer finger? Like, is that what they're defining?
It literally just means that he can't shoot, but if he could, he would be so good. And look, some guys develop a shot. I mean, it's not that this never happens, but it's
that's funny. Not what you can predict.
But what is the inverse of this, right?
Yeah.
He's not a shooter.
He can't shoot. Yeah.
He can't shoot. Yeah, that's the obvious one. So that's, you get a guy and they'll be like, you know, he's a great defender. He's got length. He's you know, he's got all these things. The problem is he can't shoot. Or you say he's got a great defender, and you know, I think he can add a shot. And if he adds a shot, then obviously he's Kawhi Leonard.
I forget which where does Bruce Pearl coach right now?
Is he Auburn?
Auburn, because it was
and he's been, it's been a
the
while
kid that the draft the Cavs American, drafted.
What's that? Yeah, Auburn. Still Auburn. Yeah.
It was a kid that the Cavs drafted, and they threw to Bruce Pearl, and they asked him like, "Do you think he'll ever be able to develop a 3-point shot?" And Bruce, stay away from the poker table, like just maybe avoid that. So he was just like, yeah, totally. Absolutely. He seems to like lift his arc a little bit.
I love that. Yeah. Just keep that elbow. I love when people give the little of the things like, you know, if he just gets his elbow in, you're like, oh, this guy attended basketball camp back in the 80s. Great, great work there, buddy. You solved it. You solved it. Keep Gilchrist. That, he's gonna.
Nobody has ever told the person who shoots with their elbow above their ear that right, you should bring that thing in. Nobody's ever given that advice.
Yeah.
All right. What's your next one?
Next one I have here is he wants to take the last shot. This is. Somebody tells me this, and I'm like, "Well, is he good enough to make it? Is he good enough to make the last shot, or is it just like?" Here we have with Timothy Luau Cabrera wanting to take the last shot every time. This is a real negative. I know you phrased it at the draft as a positive, but I'm seeing it solely as a negative right now.
I'm just picturing like Nick Young walking away with his arms.
Nick Young wants to take the last shot is definitely on his draft like scouting report.
Yeah, that's what would the opposite of that sound like? What would the negative, you know, we're just not sure he wants the ball in big moments. Have you ever heard that before? The ball got to him and he actually ducked.
Yeah.
he was standing there wide open in the corner and he said he pulled a hammy.
Yeah. This one kind of goes along with my next one because my next one was confident, which I feel is different because wants to take the last shot just means they're not passing in like big moments. Whereas confident, sometimes you want a guy that has the appropriate amount of confidence on your team. So sometimes if I hear this guy and he's like, he's going to be a backup center and he can screen really well and he can rebound and he's really confident. And you're like, well, you don't need confidence to screen well. You don't need, hold on a second. You don't need confidence to do those things you were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Watch this, coach. Boom. So,
I don't know if confidence is a good thing for my screening backup center.
I'm a little nervous that you're talking about, you know, overconfident people while you do the show with me.
Also, trust me, this one was number one. I was trying to figure out which was going to be my last one. I looked up and saw you and I go, oh, yeah, that's right.
The confidence one is funny though, because like, again, what does the inverse of that sound like? Oh, he just has to learn to believe in himself.
Well, there is actually, you know, what's funny is there were players in the draft and you see that on the scouting report about their confidence. And I think it's especially true of shooting. You know, here in Denver,
would you rather have an overconfident or an underconfident player?
Oh, man, that's a great question, isn't it? Because I think both can take you out of the league unless you're a certain level of player. I mean, if you're a superstar, yeah, there's no amount of confidence that can be too much if you're a superstar, if you're the guy. Mm-hmm. But if you're a role player, you know, there obviously is a healthy amount. But if you don't have confidence, you end up becoming the player nobody can trust in the moment. And it really is a thing. Denver drafted a guy, Tyler Lydon, a few years back, which was probably the single, certainly the single worst draft pick of, I think, of the Tim Connelly era. And I watched that guy every day in practice, best shooter on the team. He mm-hmm. could do all these things. He got in games that would be open by 10 feet and would just look around like, what am I supposed to do? He's like, dude, you're literally only in there to shoot the ball. If you can't do that, if you literally can't get yourself to take the shot, you don't have a role. Turns out he didn't have a role. So there is such a thing as not enough confidence.
Right. I think if I had to choose one, I think I'd rather have the overconfident guy. I think it's easier to dial back confidence than it is to build confidence.
Both are so hard. Almost feels innate, you know, with a lot of people, just how confident you are. It's a tricky one.
All right. What's your
the last one to send people out into the weekend? This is a good one. Raw talent. If I asked you that, you're like, I don't even know if that's good or bad, but they'll be like, you know, he's got a lot of raw talent. So he doesn't have any skill. That's what you're telling me. Yeah, no, right. It's raw. It's just raw talent.
It's the craziest thing. He dribbles with his head down when he uses his left hand. It's the craziest. But man, if he ever learns how to dribble with his left hand, look out.
Exactly.
Look out.
Raw talent, baby. There's a lot of raw talent. Unskilled would be the inverse of this. Like if you don't like a player, he's just really low skill. He's not a skilled player.
What's the raw talent player who really figured it out?
I think there's, well, honestly, I think there's a Kawhi? Lot of these guys. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, there's Kawhi, you know, certainly had some talent, but not like nobody projected him to turn into a go-to guy. Mm-hmm. I think there's a decent amount of raw talent players that came in and had like physical tools and maybe two or three skills. And then you just kind of add on top of those talents, and it really takes off.
Yeah, I wish we kind of looked at shooting in the way that we look at athleticism sometimes, right? Where like people just think like, oh yeah, that guy's going to be able to develop a jumper, and like no, that's not something that like everybody can figure out. Maybe it's a higher percentage of people can figure out how to shoot and knock down a shot like somewhat consistently than people can just learn how to jump 40 inches in the air. But I just think for especially nowadays, people talk themselves into these raw talent types and overlook, like Desmond Bane is somebody who I thought fell way too low because there are raw talents that, you know, somebody like Jaden McDaniels goes above him. And you look at Jaden McDaniels like, man, if that guy ever figures it out, well,
yeah.
Bane already did. Like Bane has it figured out. I think he's going to be good next year for Memphis. He was the kind of pick
to figure out how to have a positive wingspan or grow a few inches is his problem. So I kind of understand it. I mean, again, he has, you know, maybe a limited upside or
sure. But like if the less limited upside never figures out that upside,
right,
you never get at least the production that you got from Bane in that first couple of years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think so. Shooting is an interesting one. I just think that we haven't really. I think that's one that there's like a study on human psychology that really we know so little about it. And why I say that is we know players. I mean, you remember was it Wes Johnson, right? Mm-hmm. Phenomenal shot, just looked gorgeous. Yeah. I thought it was a textbook jumper, never went in. You look at it and you go, man, this guy's so fluid. And
Anthony Brown from Stanford shot like 45% in college, came to the Lakers and couldn't
hit. And maybe some of this is confidence, maybe it's a lot of mental. I know you talk to a lot of the shooters, the Ray Allens, the JJ Reddicks, they talk about the mental preparation, how they've had to like become obsessive about their pregame routines because of how much shooting was about like that extreme focus or whatever. But there are players that you look at and you say, man, they really fixed their mechanics and it didn't matter because they still, for some reason, can't put the ball in the hoop. And then you have guys that have the weirdest mechanics and it's great. So shooting is it's an interesting one.
I wonder, I bet you there's a really good crossover of good shooters and golfers.
Well, there is. I mean, well, I'm saying this anecdotally, but it does seem like there are a lot of great precision shooters or you know, great golfers, and it's just a precision skill or something.
Because golf is all about like attention to detail. It's all about having a short-term memory, like no short-term memory. It's just like moving along after you hit a bad shot and getting right back to the fundamentals. And it's basically what shooting is all about. This is going to be an insane weekend, man.
Maybe. We'll see. I'm not certain it'll be insane. I
don't even mean it from like the standpoint of like James Harden is going to get traded and Russ is going to get traded and all of those things. I don't even mean it that way. I just mean we are fitting in an NBA offseason into the matter of a week.
Yeah, training camps in a week and a half, yeah.
Like that's
we have one more show before training camp. That's what's crazy. We have one more. So you are right about that. I will say one thing, and maybe this is a downer to go off of, but I put this in our group chat the other day, Anthony, but I saw a lot of like the hashtag this league comments and stuff on Monday night or whenever when James Harden was requesting out and all that, and people being like, this is crazy. And I'm telling you, this is the first year where I'm like, no, it's not. Guys, this is like 8 off seasons in a row where players have like out of the blue requested to be traded, and it's not that crazy. It's just this is what the league is now. It's going to happen next year. We already see certain players on the horizon say, okay, maybe that player asks out. But there's going to be so many more that I just none of this is crazy to me. So people, I think a lot of people still find it entertaining. But for me, a little bit of the novelty has worn off just because there's no shock value. Going into this weekend, I expect there to be some wacky and zany people asking for a trade. And it's just not wacky and zany anymore.
I hope we go the other direction where like 15th players demand a trade. Like the 15th man on your roster. Like there's the zany stuff that there's a novelty that I need to bring back to the NBA.
You always love, when the like guy who's not quite as good as he is starts demanding things. You're like, yo, man, they're not gonna trade you where you want to go. You're coming off the bench, man. You're out of here.
Right. Like if Paul George was asked for a trade again, like, you know, come on, man.
Paul George. I mean, come on, exactly. So who knows?
No, I think there's a lot to what you're talking about. The thing that where I've kind of found myself is that there has to be some accountability for, you know, towards the superstar for the culture that they now desperately want to leave. Like James Harden, for example, you've had 3 stars all play with you and say, nope, this ain't it. I don't want to be here anymore. And now Harden is blaming Houston for it when all Houston has done is enabled him to the point where they're making PowerPoint presentations at the end of year as to why Harden should win MVP. And like where I find myself is, like, at some point, and I'm all for player empowerment and star empowerment. I don't like calling it player empowerment because it's not like Lonzo Ball felt super empowered LeBron was sending him to New Orleans for Anthony Davis.
Right.
I'm all for stars, you know, using their leverage on the league in the ways that they haven't been able to in prior iterations of it. But there also has to be some accountability so that there are some checks and balances on that as well. And I look at what James Harden has been in Houston over these last few years, and now he's demanding to go to Brooklyn, and he's going to Brooklyn. And there was a report where he's like, it just might be a couple year thing. And I'm saying, what exactly are you hoping for, James? What's the end game here? What are you playing in the NBA for?
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is. I mean, they could, and the thing with James Harden that's interesting in that scenario is you're right that a lot of times we've seen players asked out, it's because there has been some sort of like, they just haven't given me what I've needed to win. And I don't think that's true of the Rockets for the time he's been there. They put him in position to win.
Yeah.
Didn't get it done. Not his fault. Nobody's fault. Like, they were a really good team, went up against a juggernaut, got this close, didn't get it done. And they were contenders every single year. But the people that did that are no longer there. So there is a part of James looking at what is very clearly a sinking ship and saying, man, I know you've been really good to me, but all the people that were good to me are gone. And this ship's going down and I want off. So it's kind of a funny situation. I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Billy Zane in Titanic, right? He's going to grab like one of the Rockets prospects. And it's like, I have a child.
Oh, right.
We'll see how this weekend goes. And this week, frankly, goes. There's going to be a whole bunch that you guys are going to have to pay attention to keep up with this NBA offseason, given the way that it's going to be condensed into only a week. As Adam said earlier, we have one show and then training camps open. So it's going to be potentially a very different league than it is right now. So if you guys want to pay attention to your local team, you can do so across the entire Locked On NBA network. You guys can come here and get your weekly kind of daily recaps on what the NBA looks like on any given day over the course of this insane week. However you choose to do so, I'm telling you, this is the best place to stay informed on everything that's going on. Have a great rest of your weekend, though. Please stay safe out there. And Adam and I will talk to you guys next Friday.